Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write also is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, writing life, as well as some video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres, all kinds of writers. As you know, my conversation with R.L. Stein, the creepy R.L. Stein. Not creepy at all. He's a very nice guy. That's up there. Some great articles by the editor Aaron Brown, Jennifer Paris. My thrice-weekly blog is up there, too. If you like fearless writing, you might want to check that out. It's all there on authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers all the way from pen to publication since 1955. If you're in the Northwest and you're a writer, you should be a member. Yes, you should be. It's excellent. It's like $65 a month. A year, excuse me, give me a break, that's nothing. And what do you get to do? You get to go to monthly meetings, you get your email, you get, it's off, and you get to take classes, you get discounts on classes. They're great. They, of course, host a conference every year, and they just support all kinds of writers. They don't care if you write romance, children's, literature, poet, doesn't matter. They support all kinds of writers. So go check them out at Author Magazine, or excuse me, at bnwa.org. That's where they are. Okay. I'm just a little rattled today. I must be very excited about my guest. I'm going to be next week, October 26th and 27th. I'm going to be down there in Pasadena, sweltering hot Pasadena, teaching writing to writers at the Writer's Digest Novel Writing Conference, their yearly novel writing conference. And I'm going to be there talking about how to listen to the muse and how to give a killer keynote, how to speak to people if you're worried about. Anyway, if you're going to be there, come say hey. Say hello, Bill. I love talking to writers about life and writing and everything. Okay, enough about me. Let's talk about Caitlin Hamilton Summey. This could be an interesting conversation. She's an interesting woman. Caitlin is the former marketing director of McMurray and Beck, and also Blue Hen Books, both wonderful publishers in their time. At each company, she managed imprint profile and directed all publicity, hardcover and paperback. But that's not just all she is. She's not just a publicist. She's an author, too. And her first book, a collection of short stories called To Lay to Rest Our Ghosts, came out last year. And it was published to excellent reviews all over the country, including a starred Foreword review, yes. And the title won a silver in the Foreword Indies Book of the Year Award, how nice, and was selected for 35 over 35's annual list, and is also a Pulpwood selection. Oh, my goodness. But she's here with us now. Caitlin, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Well, I'm happy. I'm doing my show. I always like to do my show, so I guess I'm doing okay.
I'm glad. That's great.
Well, so, Caitlin, you're kind of an unusual animal in the writing world because you came at least professionally, from the business side. You were part of marketing for McMurray and Beck and Blue Hen Books, which was a part of Penguin. And so, was writing something that was creative writing, was that always on a part of the equation, or did you just get into did you just love books, got into marketing, and said at some point, hey, I want to try my hand at this writing thing? What was the order of things?
The order was writing first, definitely. I know there are not many of us who come and publish, at least from the business side to the creative side.
No.
But I really started with the writing side. I had written all my life since childhood, and
Okay, so here I'm doing my. Sorry, I have to. I don't usually.
No, that's. I love it. I love a conversation. It's great.
So, because I always do this. So it's kind of like a survey. The average age that writers, someone as a young person, if they know from a young age they want to write, the average age is 9, I believe. It's kind of what people look up and say. So what was it for you?
Well, I don't know, because my mother told me I would bring her scribbles before I had actually learned the alphabet.
Oh, you're one of those.
So I'm one of those. Okay. But I know that I finished my first novella at 13. I do remember that.
Impressive. Very good. So
I don't know, but certainly ambitious.
Right. Well, no, that's, you know, but that's what a lot of people who really like to do it, they just recognize, like, and so you were bringing her scribbles before you could even, you know, really talk or whatever. But can you remember when you had kind of a conscious awareness, like, this is awesome. Like, I'm pretty happy when I'm doing this writing thing. Cause you know, what's interesting is that every kid is made to write. Not every kid is made to play the piano or paint or, you know, recite Shakespeare, but they're all made to write something. And so everybody's relationship to writing, everybody has a relationship with writing, good or bad. And so when did you recognize it as something you would be happy to do on your own and not just when teachers told you to?
I love when I've heard you ask this question before, and I love it because I think it really is very insightful. It lets people into that whole aspect of the writing life and where it begins. For me, it was fifth grade with
fifth
Mrs.
grade.
Bachman. She had us back in the day, we would draw, you know, we'd illustrate and write a book, and then we'd put it together with pins, these little pins.
And
she asked us to do one, and I did five. And I have them all upstairs. I have them all.
You still have them?
I do. The Purple People Eater was one.
very okay. Wow. So
I have
you
all
were
of
like,
them.
So you liked it, and you're 13. You know, when I was 13, this was a profound moment to me. I was 13. I would sit down every day before going to school, and I would work on my novel. And it was
I get you. I understand that.
And I'll tell you, when I was at a very low moment in my life, and I thought, Bill, what if you just want to quit this writing? I mean, I was really, I'd hit bottom, and I was so miserable. And I said, maybe I should just do it. I was standing in the middle of a restaurant where I was working. Just quit. And I heard a voice in my head. I saw a picture of me, age 13, writing. And a voice in my head said, what would you tell him?
Oh, wow. And
I did not quit.
No, you can't. What a powerful moment. Yeah.
It was. I had to leave. I was in the middle of the restaurant. I knew I had to walk out just to get my thoughts together. It was so kind of moving to me.
To catch your breath. Yeah.
I did. Okay, so you're 13. You're right. You're like, okay. Do you remember the name of that book? Your novella.
I remember. I remember bits of it. It was a really long title, but what I most remember is that at that time, I think it was Athenaeum had a contest for kids, and we were allowed to submit novels. Yeah, Athenaeum. I'm pretty sure
Athenaeum
it was Athenaeum.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And yeah, so I submitted my novel. It was for a kid's novel, and I remember the day it came back, and it came back because they said it was a novella, not a novel, and I was excluded from the contest, and I was crushed.
Go to hell, you bunch of God, I'm only 13. Give me a break. Okay.
I was so sad, and I still remember my dad trying to console me and to explain the difference.
God.
He was really wonderful and very compassionate. But yeah, I just now looking back, if I'd been an adult, I probably would have said, "Let the kid in." She gave it a go, but
Jesus,
they were strict about the rules. So there we go.
All right, so.
Yeah. That was my first terrible rejection as a writer, Bill.
So it begins, right?
Yes.
So it begins.
I learned
early.
There
are some people who don't go through it. There are some people who don't get much of it, but most of us do. Most of it go through it. And so I guess my question is then, did you go to college, or were you like me in a dropout in the middle? Did you actually finish college?
Well, that's another interesting question. Gosh, no one's asked me this. I considered stopping. I went to Smith College, where I majored in Middle Eastern history. But about my sophomore year, I had an agent in New York.
What?
And I broached the subject to him. Yeah, I think he's passed away.
Okay.
And I said, I think I might stop school to finish the novel. And he said, don't do it. Just don't finish school.
You got an agent when you were a sophomore?
Yeah, it was a really funky, wild thing.
Wow.
I've never had one since.
Whoa, God. Maybe he put a curse on you. All right.
He was a lovely guy, and he gave me the best and really the right advice. But yeah, I've never had any luck since, so I don't know.
Weird. Wow. So you were writing a book and you were really doing the thing. And so something must have happened. So what happened that made you? Because you know what happened with me is I dropped out of college and I was like, I am not going to have a career.
You did.
Oh,
really?
I couldn't. I was like, I can't. I was a good student, but I was like, I just can't do this. Like, I just want to do my thing. And that was not an easy. That did not lead to an easy life, I will tell you. But it's what I had to do. Because I didn't want a career. I thought if I do a career, like I only want to write. I don't want to like become a teacher or a, you know, or journalist. I tried journalism. I was like, I don't want to do journalism. And so I really was clear about that. Like, I don't care. I'll wait tables because I just want to be an artist and not get caught up in some side job. But you know, I was a little obsessed in that way. So you decided to go into the business of publishing.
Mm-hmm.
To be close to it, was that sort of your strategy? Why? How'd you get into publicity and what was the writer doing while she was helping other people sell their books?
You know, I went into it just because I loved stories. I don't think I necessarily realized at that age, oddly enough, that it was a strategic move as well.
Right.
I think that came to me far later. And I started out in editorial and vintage. I was Robin Desser's assistant and also the vintage receptionist. And that's how I got my foot in the door. I agreed
right.
to be the receptionist.
Where was Vintage? Was that New York?
It was in New York. It was up on, I think, I can't even remember, the 28th floor of the Random House building.
You really just said, screw it. I'm going to just start right in essentially close to the mailroom as I can start.
Yeah.
Really.
What was amazing was I learned so much answering those phones. I really did.
Really?
I learned who was who. Oh yeah, I learned who was who. It was a chance to actually meet people. You know, Sonny Maida would come by the desk, and I would always greet him. You know,
who
good
is
morning,
that?
Mr. Maida.
Who's Sonny Maida?
Sonny Maida was, and I think still is, the editor in chief of Knopf. And so he'd come up to Vintage to see what was going on or to have a meeting. And so, you know, I really began to put the company together and to see who did what and to understand how it all worked, not just the editorial. But I quickly realized that I wanted to write and that I wasn't really good in editorial. It wasn't where my strengths lay. So I left to do my MFA at Colorado State.
Okay.
And there's a sort of a... Took me a while to find a place, but Fred Ramey heard I was looking for a job and hired me to be his marketing and publicity director, and that was perfect for me because I love talking about books. I'm just not really great at helping someone achieve their vision by editing them. But I'm really good at telling you why I love them.
Why you
and
love
why
them.
They
That's
matter.
Fascinating. So you even though you love to write, you couldn't the whole edit. Editorial thing just was not your game. Like you had to, and so you must have given it a shot at some point, a little bit, right?
I did. I mean, I did in workshops at CSU, and I did at Vintage, trying to assess whether or not manuscripts were appropriate, you know, for the
right.
list, things like that. But in terms of really getting to the heart of things and helping somebody else achieve their vision, I felt somewhat limited.
Right.
But when he, you know, hired me, Fred did, to do the marketing, it was really easy for me to call places and tell them why I loved a book and why it was right for their readers or why it was right for their listeners. And
interesting.
For some reason, that just clicked in a way that editorial never did.
All right. So one of the things I've been asked to teach a lot recently is a workshop called Fearless Marketing. And it's actually it's a chapter in my book, Fearless Writing, but I've been asked a lot to teach it recently. And because writers are more and more asked to do their own marketing, of course, these days, and they hate it and they feel uncomfortable with it. And there's a lot of emotional reasons why they don't like it. And that's what I help them with. But the thing I always tell them to do, and it reminds me of, because I thought of it as you were describing, is I say to them, look, you have got to drill down on what is awesome about your book, because you don't know who's going to like it. You're not who's going to buy it, but you do know why you love that book and why you wrote it. And you've got to remember that first and foremost when you go out and talk to people about it. And it sounds like that's what you did basically, is you thought, why is this book awesome? And then you would see, that's just what I tell my students to do. See,
what What is it that I love about it? What makes it unique? You know, the basic three marketing questions is, what is the product? You know, what is the audience for this product, and how are we going to reach that audience? But intertwined, woven into all that is, why do I love it? And why should somebody at the San Diego Union Tribune care about this? Or why should the New York Times care about this? And it's not always easy, and not everyone agrees with you or shares your enthusiasm. But yeah, I think as a marketer, you have to tap into what sparks your imagination, what captures your attention, you know, what makes it special. And I think if authors can do that on their own, then it does give them a leg up in the marketplace.
Or at least make them less miserable, because they have so many mixed feelings about pushing their stuff and feeling like, I don't like people advertising to me. Why should I? There's so many stuff that get mixed up in just trying to share your work with other people. The idea of worrying what other people think about your stuff. There's just a lot of things that go in that have nothing to do with marketing that screw people up when they try to market. This has been my experience.
Oh, it's true. No, it's true. And I think that we are sometimes, often, our own worst enemies. And I think that it's important to remember that if we were building homes, if we were doing other kinds of things, we would not have these hesitations. And it's really hard when one's invested decades or years in a creative product to get out there and speak about it the same way. But you do have to recalibrate your thinking and tap into what makes it unique or special to you. But then you also need to put your business hat on.
Yeah.
If you want to succeed, you have to treat this like a business.
Yeah, you do.
Very hard. It's very hard for a lot of people.
It is. It's why it's nice to have people like you that they can sometimes hire to do some of that businessy stuff. But, all right, you are not just a publicist. You, as I said, you published last year a collection of short stories. So how did this come about? So you're doing this work. You're liking it. You're doing publicity. I think you have your own. Do you have your own company now? Is that what you're doing with the publicity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I actually was solo when Unbridled Books brought me in. So I worked, it's been almost 16 years. I handled all the marketing for them, but through this firm.
Okay. But so you're doing this, obviously you like it because you're still doing it,
mm-hmm.
but you wanted to write, see, but the writing never died. That fire kept burning and you decided on a collection of short stories. How did that come about? Were you writing and sort of submitting stories while you were doing, you know, at night or whenever while you were doing your day job? Or did you say, no, I'm going to sit down and write a collection? How did that come about?
Well, there are 10 stories in the collection, and 8 of them were written when I was in Colorado at Colorado State. I wasn't working full time, and I wasn't a mom. And I've always written. I've kept writing, even while I'm working. And at one point, Mark Estrin, who's the editor at Fomite, looked at my website. He and I know each other. I've worked with several of his authors, and he just decided to see how I formally presented myself, and he noticed that I'd published a few stories. I'd stopped sending them out for a while. Life intervened. And he asked me if I had a collection, and I told him immediately that no, I didn't, but I really appreciated his asking. And about a year later, something changed, and I just thought, what have I got to lose, basically?
Right.
And I sent a story out, and it was accepted. And so then I sent others out, and they started getting accepted. And I wrote to Mark, and I said, I have 10. I think it's a collection. If I'm not working with one of your authors at the time, would you consider my book? And he said, send it ahead. And a week later, he wrote back, and he said he'd accepted it, which floored me. I thought a week's reply would mean it was done. It was over. It was terrible.
Right. Usually the quick replies, often people, that's when they want it. They just know, and so they just jump on it. So that's awesome. So you knew the publisher at Fomite Press, and so and so it came out. So how long did it take you? Did you work with him on the manuscript some? Did you do some editing on it, or did you just take it as is?
He pretty much took it as is. The last two stories I'd been working on for, you know, the last story in the book took me 6 years. So what he got was a really final product. And most of what he had were line edits or things where he felt that there was something confusing or poor phrasing. But it wasn't the gigantic overhaul I expected.
Well,
But, it had been in process for decades. So you know, I guess it was pretty much ready to go, which was exciting and terrifying.
Sure.
Yeah.
Terrifying. Terrifying.
Yeah.
Why was it terrifying?
Well, I mean, I think I've shepherded enough authors through the process now to know that at some point every author has a panic. And I knew mine would be coming. You know, I could look at myself, separate myself from myself and sort of see what was coming because I've seen it for so many years working, and I knew at some point I would have this moment of, oh my gosh, like you said, it's going out there. What are people going to think? And so I did. I had my moment of terror, and then I let it go.
Good. You let it go, and then mm-hmm. it went out, and then you started hearing. Then you started hearing back from the world in various mm-hmm. forms. Did you pay attention to the reviews? Did you ignore them? What did you do with that?
I wanted not to read any of them. And
yeah.
my husband, who is in the business with me, he's also a book publicist, encouraged me to read them. And I think he was right. I think he felt that they would be heartwarming and affirming, reassuring.
Right.
But I think he also felt there were a couple that were mixed, that they would be educational and productive for me for the next book.
Were they?
I think so, yes. I found
yeah.
it very interesting. I think some of the things I will take away and consider, and other things are just how I write. And if people didn't care for it, then I'm not the writer for them, and that's just
yeah.
fine. But there were some really constructive comments that made me pause and go, huh, I should revisit how I approach this subject or the telling.
Right.
So I think he was right in the end. And also I think it's respectful to read if people have taken the time.
Yeah.
To read some of them.
I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about it. It's like the worst thing you can do when you sit down to write. I mean, I get his point of view, and I'm not sure I have the final word on this at all. But I feel like as a writer, the worst thing you can do when you actually sit down to write is to be in anybody else's head. I wrote a whole book about don't be in anyone's
yeah.
head. You got to be in your
yes.
head. That's true too.
Yeah.
You know, and if you start thinking about what other people think of it, I had an experience where a writer I quite admire had read a blog of mine and had written saying, that was great, what wonderful. And I was really thrilled at this person. And the next time I sat down to write a blog, I was like, I wonder if she'll like this one. And I thought, ouch. And that
yeah.
screwed me up as much as if she had said, you don't know how to write. It was just as
right.
disorienting. So I think it's tricky.
I think it is tricky. And I mean, I think, you know, he was right. They were reassuring, and then reading
sure.
the mixed ones just to find out, you know, what people thought or to learn. It's not a bad thing. But I do take your point. And I think that part of what I have found as a writer versus a publicist is that if you're going to read them, then you have to give yourself a significant amount of time away from those reviews before you, in my personal experience, start working on something comparable again, you know, sort
right.
of absorb it, but don't remember the fine print, don't remember the details. The global is what helps me, and I guess everybody's
okay.
different too. I mean, we all have our own process, and
right.
I think that's why, you know, interviews like this are so helpful, because we're all different, and
yeah.
learning how other people work may not, you know, maybe won't help one person, but maybe another, you know.
One of the reasons I did these interviews and why I do them on author, and why I insisted for the author ones they be video interviews so you could see them physically as human beings, is I thought it'd be very helpful for people who are still finding their way, or even for people who are starting their careers and having some success, but maybe don't have a lot of writer friends, to see that everybody goes through the same stuff. You know, we're all...
Yeah.
struggling.
We're all human. Yeah.
We're all human, and we all worry about whether it's working and will anybody like it. And I just think it's very helpful if you're going through that to realize there's nothing wrong with you for thinking this book sucks and I'll never finish it. It's so common for writers mm-hmm. to go through that, you know. So that was part
of
the reason.
I think we all need that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That community. Yeah.
Absolutely. You're not alone. So out it came, but this was like a long time coming, accumulation of stuff you started
mm-hmm.
writing when you were younger. Now you're
mm-hmm.
a grown up person. You've got kids. You've been married. You've learned. If you've been a professional, you have your own business. This changes the way you like look at the world some, you know. And so that must change the kind of stories you tell, at least a little bit, maybe. So do you want to write short stories? Do you want to write novels? What's next for Caitlin?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. I think that I've always written short stories, but I also write poems, and I have a novel drafted and done. I just need to rewrite it for a couple of years probably, but it's the first draft's done. And I've also, in the last, probably because I am a mother, in the last 7 years, I've completed a middle grade novel and some picture books. I write whatever I want to write. I give myself permission to just do whatever I feel inspired to do. So I have a lot of things in the pipeline.
Yeah.
But it's going to take me a long time to get them done because I do love my job and I do love my family. And so...
Oh, the hell with them. You got it right. No, okay. All right, good for you. Yeah, you're a good person. But you've got a lot. You got many irons in the fire in terms of creative projects. You know, picture books, middle grade to novels. And so do you, when you sit down to work, do you just say, what's interesting to me today? Or do you say, all right, I'm going to really finish that middle grade novel. Nah, I want to just like spend the next 6 months getting it. Or does it just vary from day to day?
I just decide what I feel like working on that day. I just, what am I interested in today? Also, I have 10 minutes. What can I do in 10 minutes?
Really are trying to put it in where you can.
Oh, yes, because I have two children and they're 10 and 11.
Okay, it's a little better than 6 and 5.
Yes.
A little better.
Yes. Yeah. And so I just, in trying to squeeze in the homework and the new math, which is like studying Russian for me. And...
Oh, please, don't even get me started. I went through it.
Yeah, so I just take what I can get out of each week, not even each day.
Right,
and,
okay.
I'm grateful for it, I guess.
It's good. Good, listen to you. Listen, there's a lot of you guys out there listening now. You've got full lives like Caitlin here. You see, get what you can where you can. It sounds like you don't beat yourself up if you only get in an hour in 1 week, for instance. Like you don't sit around and say, what? That's key.
That's very kind of you. Yeah, I just can't. I can go whole weeks without having a chance to write anything. And I've had years. So I'm just grateful for whatever I can get. I'm thrilled that the book was published, that I did it, I said to my kids at my launch, it was worth waiting 25 years if it meant I got to celebrate with you.
That's nice. Did they like that or did they roll their little pre-adolescent eyes at you?
They got it. They were with me the whole process. They saw some of the stories were rejected and some were taken, and then the book was accepted. And so they understood dreams take work, and Mom did it, and they were proud of me. They were also really relieved. It's not easy to see, stories your mom wrote get rejected, is it?
No, they didn't.
No.
But they saw you see it through. That'll be so helpful to them, I think, I just don't know. My parents lived their lives and had their experiences, and some helped me. Some of their failures helped me. Some of their successes didn't help me. So I don't know how it works with everybody. It's a little different. Well, all right. Well, Caitlin, when you finish something and you get it published, let me know. Maybe we can have you back on this show.
At the rate I'm going, I'll be 90, but I will call you. I will email you.
All right, good. Well, you know where to find me. But I'm not done with you yet. You listen to the show, you know what's coming. So first of all, if people want to find out about you, if they want to hire you to be their publicist, I should say she got herself on this show by Conch. She was really friendly and straightforward, and I couldn't say no. Plus, we have a mutual friend who she helped get on my show. So my guess is she's a great publicist. So if they want to hire you or work with you, where do they go? Just Caitlin, where do they go? Tell me.
The business website is CaitlinHamiltonMarketing.com.
All right. And you have an author type website?
I do. My author website is CaitlinHamiltonSummy.com.
All right. Easy enough. Okay. So if they want to learn more, that's where they can learn it. And to lay to rest our ghosts, they can buy it, well, wherever, probably Amazon's the easiest, but maybe it's in their bookstores now. It's hard to say with short story collections.
It is, yeah. In some stores nationwide, yes.
Right. To lay to rest our ghosts, it's called. So, Caitlin, finish the sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Humility.
Ha! Good one. How did it teach you that? With all those rejections or just the patience? How did it teach you that?
I think the rejections, I think the patience of waiting for, quote unquote, my turn. I think also just the seeing a story come through in the end. You know, the last one, as I said, took me 6 years. And sometimes you really have to work hard and be grateful that you got there.
That's awesome. Humility. It's a good one. It's a good one. Caitlin, thanks so much. It was great talking to you.
I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. Bye-bye. Well, humility, people. It's true. It's true. You got to be humble. You got to be humble. You know why? Well, there's a lot of reasons why. But another reason is, you know, you're not really writing these things. Not totally. You're kind of, you and something else are doing it. Isn't that true? I think it is. You can call it your muse, whatever you want to call it, but you got to open the door and let the story in. So next week, I'm going to be having Adam Caton Holland on. He was the one I was going to have on about a month ago when my internet went down, but he graciously agreed to come back. It's a memoir. He's a funny guy. He's a comedian, an actor. Should be a lot of fun. As always, I want to thank my dear friend and producer, RJ Jeffries. All you people out there, all you authors, go do something that you just love doing with someone you love. Always good.